Welcome to The Virtual Shift, a show looking at the seismic changes happening in healthcare with virtual care at the epicenter. Join me and my guests as we look at key cultural and policy shifts impacting how providers, payers, and patients connect, as well as how care is being reimagined both for today and the future. Hello, and thanks for tuning in today. I'm your host, Tom Foley. You can learn more about this show by visiting the program on healthcarenowradio.com, and be sure to follow me on LinkedIn, Twitter, at FoleyTom. And the hashtag, The Virtual Shift. With me today, we have Deanna Larson, CEO of AveraCare and the founding member of the American Board of Telehealth. Deanna, welcome.
Good morning. Thank you, Tom.
Awesome. So, Deanna, tell us a little bit about yourself and AveraCare, eCare, and if you even would like a little bit about the American Board of Telehealth and your role there.
Oh, awesome. Well, thank you for the opportunity to be here. I think the opportunity to give you a little bit of history about the telehealth practices that we've been providing over some time, and now, you know, really what's happened in this future is a part of the history or part of the story. So historically, what I'd want you to know is meaning eCare, actually resides in a very rural part of the United States. So South Dakota, North Dakota, Minnesota, Iowa, et cetera. You know, what I've come to find out that there's ruralness all over the United States, but certainly in these very less populated states that I come from, there's a lot of small population density per square mile. So that means difficult access to healthcare and having to travel a lot of miles. So my background as a nurse, working many parts of the healthcare industry, if you will, from very acute care, critical care, and one of the largest destination centers in the world, providing leadership in critical care, to frontline schools, school nursing, public health nursing, also worked in skilled nursing with the elder population. So a lot of exposure to different kinds of healthcare needs, as well as spent a decade of my life providing the quality, vice president of quality for a health system. So again, had the opportunity to look at impact of care we were providing, outcomes of that care that we were providing, how it was impacting individuals. So as I came into the opportunity then, in this part of my career, to really get a good idea about what the opportunities were with better access to healthcare, patients having better access to physicians and nurses having better access to those patients. It really became such an aha moment that there's really this huge opportunity with technology to spread and to gain a lot of individual access to healthcare and really improve and impact outcomes. So this last 10 years of my life has really been that understanding that about 10 years ago, I was actually pretty disappointed in some of the articles that I would see, even peer review articles talking about poor outcomes of care because people had sought care in rural communities. Well, let's be honest, that's where they live. And the next community is another hour and a half away. Yeah. And the clinicians in those communities are trained and tested and skill-setted in the same way those who live in very urban centers. And I started to have a great feeling and understanding about these are the same clinicians. They just don't have the same access to resources and colleagues who would typically, if you went to an ED and you were having a heart attack, you very quickly would be having access to a cardiologist. Well, that's not possible in a remote community. So how do I get them, that physician, ED physician provider, immediate collegial access to a cardiologist to take the next steps that are necessary to have the same outcomes you would have in an urban center? So that's it's just really been just a wonderful kind of growth, if you will, of my own to really see how technology enabling such great minds, and again, the minds of clinicians to really take care of patients and giving them access to each other, really been a rewarding experience.
Awesome. And the rural characteristics of a virtual care delivery model is certainly a challenging one when you talk about broadband and even the necessary technology that you need on both sides of that internet. So very challenging. And we'll get more into that in a moment. So when you talk about telehealth and access, and you talk about needing access to that cardiologist, and you use telehealth video in a sense, that is certainly one aspect of it. What's your broader definition of telehealth as you look at it across your community and how you serve the different segments of your community?
Yeah, certainly. That was a very, you know, robust and emergency type of situation. So back that up, we'll just take children. I'll take something unusual like the mother of a newborn who's very concerned about a newborn, everything from crying, I can't sleep, I can't nurse or breastfeed, and just no help. Could that individual get access to a nurse, a lactation specialist in the middle of the night to really support and help that individual? That may not seem like a big deal until that baby ends up dehydrated in the emergency department. Okay. Yeah, and the mother is so fatigued and maybe ends up with a different situation of depression postpartum because I just can't keep up. I don't know what I'm doing. That's a very thought to be a well situation, a very well newborn mother and infant, and yet it can spiral. And oftentimes what happens is that could be a congestive heart failure patient. It could be a depressed person. Sometimes when we need help, and you think about yourself, when you need something, you want to be able to reach out and get some sort of satisfaction that something has been addressed. Well, with telehealth, when it could have access, maybe it's just online, a access point that walks you through because it's got AI within it that says you're experiencing these symptoms. This might be a sign of, and think about this. And based on how you answer those questions, it'll take you down your own pathway. So all of those things, we as consumers, we want answers. We want to be connected. We want to take care of ourselves. But delays, actually, when I don't feel good and I make an appointment and the appointment is 10 days away, I feel better in 10 days, maybe. But maybe that night I didn't, and I wish I would have went to the appointment.
That's correct. I'm sick now, right? So I need a doctor now, not 10 days from now, right? 24-hour flu still doesn't have the symptoms in 10 days. So absolutely agree. Yeah.
So I think telehealth is so broad. It's like we're smart consumers. We're Googleized, if you will. We know how to get information. We want answers. So let's just make sure consumers get the right answers that are really based off from healthcare providers providing the right resource and endpoints for them.
So I read in the in part of your previous writings, you talk a lot about medical devices and the use of medical devices in a telehealth setting. Tell us a little bit about the eCare program where you might be using medical devices where they're at the on the consumer side of the equation, and how the doctor is able to access the data points generated from those devices.
So a couple of different points there that you might be bringing up. So I'm going to take a point where there's maybe a rural clinic where there's a nurse practitioner wants a hepatologist to kind of look on a patient who's either pre or post liver transplant. Those physicians, the hepatologist wants to be able to see maybe closer a skin color or wants to look at a surgical scar or how it's healing, how the incision is healing. So using devices and methodologies to talk that local provider, the person in the room, reminding you this could be a family member at home. Walk me through a closer visualization. Show me how the patient looks and acts when you press on their tummy and I want you to press right here. And shows them where to do that, and then the physician can actually look at the reaction of the patient. That's just a very simple visualization on a camera. A mother saying, my child's really short of breath, their sound all stuffed up. A physician being able to see on camera if there's retractions of the ribs during that breathing. Now they're going to send that baby to the ED immediately versus telling them to do some other kind of just at home kind of remedy intervention. So other kinds of devices. So we definitely use otoscopes, you know, so that a mother can place a device on the child or their mother, you know, an elder's chest, so mm-hmm. that the person on the other end can hear the heartbeat. They can also look in the ears, camera into the ears with otoscopes so that we can see, does that baby really have an ear infection? Now, remember, that doesn't mean, we'll just tell them, yep, that's why the baby's crying. It doesn't necessarily mean every ear infection these days is going to get an antibiotic, but at least it's going to relieve the mother. That's what's happening. Here are the things you can expect, and here's how you should take care of it. You know, it's those things, especially in today's era, we treat infections like that differently. So with those devices, when we can look and actually see it looks like that, what we're really able to do with the visualization of those pieces of or those devices is to assure both the clinician what's really happening in that situation with the patient as well as the person calling in with the patient.
Interesting. So eCare has been long at the telehealth model, virtual care delivery model, long before COVID. So you have a bit of perspective in that most health systems, rightfully so, had to react quickly. They just did something, right? They used a video program, no matter what it was, so that they can maintain a patient-provider interaction and access to deliver care. But the idea, so I would refer to that as a low acuity encounter. It's a video encounter. You can certainly do a lot in that scenario, but the integration of medical devices, whether it be an otoscope, a stethoscope, or even data flowing off of your bicep from a blood pressure cuff, right? So moving from a low acuity encounter to a high acuity encounter, certainly, and it sounds like you're doing a lot of that. Is that a fair statement?
Let me give you an example. Okay. In the emergency department, we are in 200 different hospitals in emergency rooms. And so you can imagine that some of those traumatic situations, arrivals of patients either with heart attack and or a trauma situation, the first thing to save their life is usually what we call ABC, airway, breathing, circulation. So if they can't breathe on their own, there's no hope. And one of the things our board of ED physicians found to be very difficult for them to watch was the attempts at placing a tube in their airway so that they could do mechanical ventilation. That's not a common, it's common in a high level ED, it's common in the OR operating room. It's not common in a small rural, especially rural emergency department that you would have to do that very often. Now, again, all of these clinicians were trained in this, but you know yourself, if you don't do something with some regularity, you get a little bit less confident in what it is you can do. And now you have a life on the other end of what we call, that where we're trying to intubate or put a tube into that airway. Your confidence, your hands are most likely actually shaking because it's a pretty intense situation. So we have a camera on the end of that intubation tube that actually flows back to us in our ED setting. Our physician can see those landmarks in that airway, tell them where to push, how to put pressure. Sometimes we have to put pressure outside the neck just to get the tube to go in the right place. And, that's life-saving. That's what we call first-pass intubation. And that may be the first time on a real patient that provider on that end of the camera was actually able to do that. So you can just imagine the rush and the thrill of actually being able to save that. That's the first step in saving that person's life if they came into that emergency department without an airway. Pretty big deal.
Pretty big deal. I agree. It is, that's why I say, reimagining the delivery of care. There are so many enhancements to the delivery of care. Leveraging both tools. And that was actually going to be a question I was going to ask. Oftentimes we hear, telehealth is great, right? It's got its benefits, but it's not, in my view, even though I talk about telehealth all the time, it's not the end all be all, right? There's still the brick and mortar, and there's still virtual care. In my view, it's the merger of the two that creates the greatest value for the community. Any thoughts on that?
Well, you've nailed it. You're absolutely right. It's first of all complementary, and it absolutely needs to be integrated as a tool set. I guess it would be like, imagine what care was like before we had X-ray or imaging. Did we think that was, did you need to go to a separate place and do that imaging and then go back to the hospital? Well, in some cases you did. So what we have done over the decades is we've integrated imaging or X-ray. Now that all comes across, what that can be shared so easily on video or digitalized versus I'm old enough to know it used to come out in big flat plate, black and white, negative looking, if you will, from a picture, look like a picture. And those would have to be, imagine they were manually mailed to go on to the next level of care or sent with the ambulance. Well, now it's all digitized. It's all digitally shared. And so that's how we integrated something of that technology source into the care of patients, really understanding how that imaging would change from time to time. So how do we now integrate the interface of patients with nurses, pharmacists, physicians, nurse practitioners, specialists into the practice of course, it doesn't take the place of brick and mortar. But when you did have a virtual visit with an individual who is caring and providing a plan for you and your care, how do you mobilize that and take that with you when you do need to go to brick and mortar? And of course, there will always, maybe in 50 years, all interventional surgery will come to your home. I won't probably be here to see that. I'm not saying the Jetsons can't occur.
I hear you.
But you know, in the middle, there's it's a tool set. It's an integration. How do we use it to our best capacity to not bring someone with exasperation, of congestive heart failure? How to not bring them into the clinic every time we just need to maybe just titrate a medication if we can do that and watch them for 5 or 6 hours and see what happens. That's all it is.
Exactly. I agree. If you're just joining in, we're listening to The Virtual Shift. And I am your host, Tom Foley, and we're speaking with Deanna Larson, and we're talking about reimagining the delivery of care and her perspective and experience at eCare. Deanna, I want to lean in a little bit more on the home, that patient. So, you know, it's one thing to still go to a community hospital, which may be a distance in and of itself in a rural setting. And then but then to go to the city, if you will, it's even longer. So do you see in a rural setting the home becoming that setting of care? And when I talk about the home becoming the setting of care, you talked about that device, right? Maybe not every home needs to have an otoscope, but a series of devices that are more interactive in a telehealth session. Do you see that becoming more the norm as we move forward?
I sure hope so. You know, I have to say while we have cut our teeth, meaning America, understanding telemedicine better in our rural geographies, that was just the beginning. There are so many individuals who live all across highly densely populated metropolitan areas that also have difficult access points, whether it's, you know, 10 miles away or, you know, 2 miles away or around the block, you know, Seriously.
So, that is so true. One of my previous guests was Dr. Ira Kirschenbaum from the Bronx Care. So he's just the opposite, right? He's in the Bronx of New York. It's a very tightly dense population, and access to care has its own challenges. And that's one of the things that intrigued me about you. You're on the flip side, if you will, in rural America and talking about similar challenges relative to access. So I'm happy to hear Congress looking at how we can address the gaps within both the urban setting and the rural setting, because that's where the need is greatest. What do you think some of the challenges are if you were to kind of rewrite your own policies or enhance the policy? What would some of those policies be to help you enhance virtual care delivery within your community?
You know, what I believe part of the real issues are is workforce, right? So there's just, especially the more specialized you get, and again, if you live metropolitan or if you live rural, there are different workforce issues as far as I can't recruit to a rural geography because maybe people don't want to live there, A, or B, because there's not enough population to support me as a physician. I'm a specialist. I'm a peds rheumatologist. You know, I may actually need patients from 3 or 4 states in this area to actually make my profile big enough to satisfy me that you know, that's what I went to school for. That's my training. So although in the urban or metropolitan, some people may be wanting to get out of that very, very compact lifestyle, and so they want to move out of that, they're just packed with patients and people having difficulty getting into them too. So access issues are different, but all the same, it's about the workforce and how do we really think about this highly skilled and trained workforce, whether that's RNs or peds rheumatologists, and make them accessible to patients so that they can get what they need without having, again, to drive to a place, check into a place. So not only is that difficult from a drive, it's a time element, right? Sometimes you just, you have to take a half a day off work to get to a clinic appointment. And so many people, no matter where they live, forego that, especially if there's a codependency on another driver or someone to take them to that appointment. So then we see spiraling illnesses, especially with individuals with chronic diseases. We see that just continue to spiral till we end up in the hospital. So yeah, how do we put devices in the home that, you know, whatever the illness is, if it's, you know, if it's our most recent situation with COVID showed us if we could put oxygen saturation monitors in homes and help talk people through that. Yes, I understand you feel short of breath. Here's some things we can do. We actually deliver O2 and manage them and monitor them at home with their family help. and everyone was happier. That was such an amazing experience and uptake of telemedicine, because if the family members would have taken them into the hospital, they wouldn't see them through any of that illness, or maybe ever. So really managing the family, learning to manage illness at home with nurses and physicians calling in, whatever the device the illness need is, we can put scales, we can put, you know, certain laboratory products in the home to get device or laboratory feedback. You know, there's even mobile imaging pieces we can put in homes now. It all depends on how many times we have to take someone in the home to help them with those devices. Mostly that would be diagnostic devices. But the remote monitoring, we can see, like you said, heart rates, respiratory breathing, pulse oximetry, oxygen saturations. We can be constantly reading those on very sick people or very well people. But I think it's really true that many families have understood that there's risk to going to the hospital. If I can manage my loved one at home, I'm not exposed to unnecessary, maybe virulent bacteria or viruses that I don't have to be exposed to if I can take care of the loved one at home. Most people take time off anyway to go to the hospital with their loved one. So can America get used to family members staying home with ill people to help manage and support their care? It's a big change.
It's a big change. It's a huge shift. And in that context, I'd love to hear your additional comments on how do we pivot, right? We get so caught up in the norm as opposed to thinking of a new way. So when you talk about the home, I look at monitoring in three different facets. One, if I had that medical device, I might not use it every day, but maybe for certain conditions I would if I have chronic conditions, but I'm going to self-monitor. And then if I, escalation of care, I'm going to remote monitor. Well, self-monitoring says no one's really watching, but I need to take my blood pressure every day. I remember my mom with cancer. She lived with my sister. My sister had to take her temperature every day, her blood pressure every day. You know the drill. So, but it wasn't connected to anything. But it was for that visiting nurse that came 2-3 times a week. Then remote monitoring says, hey, that remote nurse, maybe I need to. I could, if I knew the data. Right. Instead of the doctor looking at the chart before you walked in the door, the exam room, they looked at the electronic chart before they came to the home, the exam room. But then when they came with some maybe different equipment, or they brought the clinic with them to do more detailed analysis. So you have self-monitoring, remote monitoring, and visiting nurse services. Is that an accurate depiction about how you would roll out virtual care?
Part of the whole concept for me of virtual care is wellness. So I like to not think about, I like to remove what's going to make you go into that brick and mortar. Not because I don't like brick and mortar, just because that means you need a lot more than what we can do at home. So I like to think of AI. You're taking your blood pressure with whatever frequency you need to, but you are connected somewhere to something that's keeping track of your blood pressure. And what if for 3 days in a row, your blood pressure was up a little and you got a note, an email or a text that said, hey, noticed your blood pressure's up 3 days. Have you considered your salt intake? What's going on? Are you getting sleep? Have you taken your medications? Whatever those three things. And you go, you know what? Whatever. I have been eating Easter ham, so I'm going to stop that, whatever that is. And then I'm going to keep taking my blood pressure. And now you're more interested because someone said, oh, your blood pressure's up a little bit. Okay. So you're going to start paying attention, kind of wondering what's happening. And so it's all about your involvement in your own health and something AI kind of pivoting you a little bit to say, here's what's going on with you. You'll always, always should have access to a real person. So do I believe that AI all by itself is, the way? No. But I think that you're bright. I'm just using you as the patient. You're bright. You're smart. You want to be well. You want to live longer, maybe to see grandchildren, whatever that is. And so you're going to say, hey, someone's noticing. 3 days, it doesn't change. Maybe you would get a call then from who's ever connected on that other end. And because of your history, that physician or nurse practitioner is going to say, let's titrate that one med you're taking just a little bit. And so you do that and you then follow along those changes. If it's serious enough blood pressure, you go in and you do the rest of that laboratory diagnostic. But if they can titrate you and you can continue to feel pretty well, before you ever get so bad that you need to go to that brick and mortar. That's my vision of how do we really keep people healthier and give them the feedback loops they need to really do what they can do to keep themselves healthy.
I agree. It's all about the how do we get to the path of wellness, right? But we have two sides of the pendulum that we're dealing with, right? We have that 80% side that's where 1% of our dollars are spent. But we can't keep repeating history to kind of where the pendulum or the can keeps getting kicked down the road to spending a lot of money on that front. It's really about how do we start at day one, if you will, on this idea of wellness? Because we can get rid of the curve at the end and have a greater leveling out, if you will. So, and you're right on the idea of AI, because I look at it as the overall trends: growing population, aging population, population contracting more and more chronic conditions. That coupled with less doctors and nurses, that's where we have to reimagine care.
Yes.
And so how do we do it better with less resources? And me having a coach, AI, helps fill the gap and a credible gap with credible resources as we move forward. So any closing comments, Deanna?
Well, I just appreciate this time. And I will say I've been in healthcare for quite a few decades. And so I've come from a time when I was in nursing school, when something like a cholecystectomy, a gallbladder removal, which is now a same day procedure, right? You can go into the hospital and you're home that next day. And some people are at work within 24, 48 hours. Okay. Well, when I started my career as a nurse, those people were in the hospital a week.
Yeah.
Okay. So we are evolving as a healthcare industry, and the next step of evolution for me is embracing technology and how it can support individuals. We've, as healthcare providers, we've long wanted those who have especially chronic diseases to take investment in their own healthcare. So let's let them do that. The healthcare industry has to allow the consumerism to blossom, and we have to have the regulatory side open up our access to them with some of the regulatory issues that are still out there. So if we can put those parts together, I'm really hopeful for my grandchildren that this can awesome. Be a little different.
Well, Deanna, you certainly have educated the audience today with your experience and insights. I really very much appreciate that. So with that, I want to thank you again, and I appreciate your joining us, and hopefully we can have you on again sometime soon.
Well, thanks so much, Tom. It was great talking with you.
I would like to thank the show sponsors, both HP and Intel. HP Engage long lifecycle products provide the stability, safety, and security you need, plus flexibility and performance designed for today and tomorrow. As well, Intel would like you to know we're going above and beyond together with new standards for business with the latest Intel vPro processors, delivering what IT needs for performance, security, remote manageability, and stability. And be sure to check out the program page on healthcarenowradio.com. And remember, connect or follow me on LinkedIn, Twitter, at Foley Tom, and follow the show's hashtag, The Virtual Shift. I'm Tom Foley. Until the next shift.